Good morning, everyone. You saw this chart yesterday, which is Christadelphian teaching since 1848. And I think as you move through this chart, you can readily see that there is continuity. There is certainly a reflection of the very things that we've been discussing over the course of this week. Note, we start with Nebuchadnezzar's image here. In Daniel 2, we look at Daniel 7 and Daniel's fourth beast and its development. We considered Revelation 12 with the great red dragon. We moved into yesterday the beast of the sea phase. And today, Lord willing, we're going to be dealing with the beast of the earth and wrap up with the scarlet-colored beast that we see here, leading up to the full manifestation of this ecclesiastical and civil power of these last days. If you would, turn to Revelation 13 with me. And we're going to be picking up today at verse 11. Just a couple more comments before we get started. You'll see that we have considered Daniel 7 and the fourth beast. And then we have looked at down through the beast of the sea. And these are the two that we're going to be doing today. Here's the chart that we looked at earlier, Daniel's fourth beast development. And of course, we're going to be talking about the beast of the earth. And we'll leave this one up there. Okay. This beast arising out of the earth has two horns like a lamb, but it speaks as a dragon. It manifests great wonders or great signs, we're told. Fire from heaven upon the earth, deceiving men by its power and its influence. It makes an image of the beast of the sea and causes it to live. As a result of its military prowess, men hearken to the voice of the image and acquiesce to the mark that he orders them to, that he orders them to place on their right hands or in their foreheads. This beast imposes economic controls, limiting buying and selling to those who have the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name, which is given as 666. The beast of the earth resembles the beast of the sea in many respects and many aspects. Look at verse 11 here in Revelation 13. This new power developed into the Holy Roman Empire. It was not limited to the area of the Mediterranean, but rather it included Central Europe as well. A division in the so-called Christian church came about, and the East and the West were divided into the Greek and the Roman Catholic religions. It's interesting, we've seen the Greek Orthodox and the Catholic religion come back together in our day, and we're seeing the Russian Orthodox being gathered into that fold. So we will see, once again, you know, that unity and unanimity of thinking. They're headquartered in Constantinople and Rome. The Pope could no longer count on the support of the Emperor in the East because Constantinople was being weakened at this time. The Lombards had laid claim to Rome, and there was basically no help from the East. Pope Stephen II crossed the Alps and sought Pepin's support, and later Charlemagne's after the death of Pepin. In 799 AD, Pope Leo III crowned Charlemagne as emperor, setting up what became known as the Holy Roman Empire. Charlemagne conquered the Germanic nations of Central and Northern Europe. And we're told that this beast had two horns like a lamb. The religious power of the Pope and the military power of the emperor are denoted in these two horns. Their unified effort looked like a lamb, claiming to be Christian, once again known as the Holy Roman Empire. But remember, it spoke as a dragon, reflecting the true characteristics of this beast. The dragon, we noted, was paganized military imperialism. And the Holy Roman Empire was founded on the imperialistic ambitions of Charlemagne, similar to those of the Emperor of Constantinople. In verse 12, we read, "And he exercised all the power of the first beast before him," or in the presence of that earlier beast phase. "Before him" is translated by Brother Thomas as "in the presence of." The first beast wasn't destroyed. The two-horned beast was established in the presence of the ten horns which remained of the first beast and which had embraced Christianity. Notice also this phrase, "causa the earth," that is, those over whom Roman Catholicism held sway. And this is a quote that I'd like to share with you from the 13 lectures, just summarizing some of what has already transpired and has brought us to this point. "The dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority," as we read in this verse 13. The dragon, as we have seen, first represented the political paganism of Rome in its opposition to the Christian name in the West. This political paganism was headed up in Licinius, whose seat of government was Byzantium, afterwards called Constantinople. Licinius in the east, Byzantium. Constantine in the west, or Rome, presented at this time the historical counterpart of the dragon and his angels on the one side, and Michael and his angels on the other. And remember that Michael means he who is like El, or like God. And this would have been characteristic of Charlemagne at this point in time, inasmuch as that he was introducing Christianity. Far from being a true Michael, as we well know. When Constantine had overthrown Licinius, he transferred his capital from Rome to Byzantium, which he built anew and named Constantinople. Here he and his successors became what Licinius's government had been before them, the dragon. They did so by reason of occupying the same capital, ruling the same territory, and assuming the same hostility towards the true witnesses of Christ. It was from Constantinople that the persecution of the church emanated in Constantinian and succeeding times. Constantinople continued to be the throne of the dragon, though professedly Christian in character. Two horns like a lamb. A recognition of this is necessary to enable us to understand the statement that the dragon gave to the beast of the sea his power and his seat and his great authority. It was from the emperor reigning in Constantinople in the east that the papacy in the west received its constitution and recognition, or its power and seat and great authority, as we considered yesterday. The history of the uprise of the papacy will show you this. The dragon had the power to bestow, and bestowed it on the Bishop of Rome after wavering for some time between the Bishop of Rome and the Bishop of Constantinople. It was not an instantaneous or a single act of appointment. And we alluded to this yesterday. The competition between Rome and Constantinople for the headship of Christendom extended over more than a century. It was terminated in favor of Rome by the Emperor Justinian in AD 535, whose decision was finally confirmed and established by his successor, the Emperor Phocas, in AD 606 to 68 or 610. And the point being here, of course, that again, where did this beast receive its power? From the support of the emperor. This phrase in verse 12 here, to worship the first beast. The first beast is the papal organization. The beast of the sea performed functions of the dragon and was called upon mankind to give their loyalty to the Pope. Charlemagne spread his empire and Christianity. The Germans became Christians and Frankish subjects. And in verse 13, we're told that, and he doeth great wonders, and this is in the Greek, semeia, or signs. And Charlemagne demonstrated to the Pope his ability to help achieve the will of the papacy. We're told in this verse that fire would come down from heaven. And we know that fire on earth refers to anger, war, destruction, conflict in general, persecution. We see this used in relation to, particularly to the deity. Let's look at Isaiah 42. Isaiah 42 and verse 25. Therefore he hath poured upon him the fury of his anger and the strength of battle, and it hath set him on fire round about. Yet he knew not, and it burned him, yet he laid it not to heart. And these, the Lord is dealing with Israel in this context. Just one other. Let's look at Isaiah 66. And this is the very activity that we're talking about here in this verse, except it is at the hands of this power that's exercising influence and control in the person, particularly of Charlemagne. 66 and verse 15. For behold, the Lord will come with fire and with his chariots like a whirlwind, to render his anger with fury and his rebuke with flames of fire. All of this, this fire that was to come down from heaven, is representative of the work of Pepin and later Charlemagne against the adversaries of Rome. It was in the sight of men. The fire was secular and ecclesiastical. And it was all by the armies of the empire. The papal interdicts were in the statements and documents of excommunication and all, were emanating from the papacy at this point in time in order to bring the subjects under control. Going back to Revelation 13, we read in verse 14, and deceiveth them that dwell, as we read in verse 14, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast. The papacy, we know, duped its followers in a variety of ways. One of the things that was suggested at this point in time, that an image be made which of the beast, which had the wound by a sword and did live. This developed when the powers of the emperor and the pope clashed. Plans were secretly developed within the church by which the popes would be ecclesiastical monarchs of the world, but also temporal rulers patterned after Constantine the Great. This was the forming of the image of imperial Rome. Pope Boniface declared that all humans were subject to the sea, that's S-E-E, of Rome. Boniface's throne was decorated with sword, crown, and scepter, and he declared, I am Caesar, I am emperor. The two-horned beast, the Holy Roman Empire, gave the image its life, and he had power to give life unto the image of the beast. The Frankish kings, beginning with Pepin, enabled the image to speak. The papal monarchy had its states of the church in Vatican City in central Italy, which became an ecclesiastical temporal dominion, just as it is today. The papal empire was the living image of the older empire of Rome. and the popes reigned as the Caesars reigned, with the dragon in the east and the beasts in the west. The power and the influence of Rome grew throughout Europe. And it was by the means of these miracles or signs that it was accomplished. Wonders or signs. The theological deceptions of Rome. Let's look at 2 Thessalonians, a very familiar passage to us. 2 Thessalonians 2. Picking up at verse 7. For the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders, with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believed not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. This was all done in the sight of the beast. The Holy Roman Empire was set up in the presence of the horned powers on the beast of the sea within their midst, saying that they should make an image, an icon, as we have discussed here. We know that the reference is directly to the papacy, and not only the representation and manifestation of the beast, but the image which men worshipped. It had a wound, and the papacy, supported by the empire, indicates that there was a resurrection of the previous beast. And as we said, this happened really in the beast of the earth period, even though the Gothic head was destroyed in the beast of the sea era. We know that the barbarians continued to create issues within the empire. And so we actually see the eighth head manifested in this beast of the earth period. Going back to Revelation 13, verse 15, we read, "And he had power to give life." And this word power, once again, is dunami, D-U-N-A-M-I, or dynamics. The ability to perform these things. The Holy Roman Empire gave political and ecclesiastical life to the beast. And individuals were forced to worship or suffer the consequences of the sword. We notice also in verse 15 that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. We know that the image was issuing during this time decrees. Men were forced to give unquestioning allegiance to the papacy. Look at Daniel 7:20. Daniel 7, verse 20. And of the 10 horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom 3 fell, even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth, that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. Of course, we know that's a direct reference to the papacy. Let's look at verse 16 of Revelation 13. And he caused all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark. The word rendered mark here appears only in the Apocalypse, except for Acts 17:29, where it is translated as graven. In all other places where it occurs, it is translated mark, and always refers to the mark of the beast. We see this in Revelation 14:9, 15:2, 16:2, Revelation 19:20, and 20 and verse 4. Slaves, we know, were branded in the hand or in the forehead to identify the fact that they were under servitude and denoting that they had a specific master. The Catholics crossing in the sign of the cross is also indicative of a mark, if you will. And we know that the priests, when they undergo the process of ordination, actually have a mark, the mark of the cross, made in their hands. The right hand and the foreheads. And as we know, this is very much reflective of and denoting the fact that it is with the right hand, primarily, that we do activities and perform various acts. And so it denotes action. And the forehead, that of thinking, relative to the motivating influences that are causing these actions. And so there, very appropriately, there is this mark in the hand and in the foreheads of these followers. Let me read just an excerpt concerning this mark. And this is by Paul Billington, The Revelation Today. He says, in the passage before us, the word mark is the Greek charagma, charagma, literally an impress. It is used in Hebrews 1:3, where it is rendered the express image. It is akin to the Greek character, charakter, character. So what is the mark or impress? Well, the mark of the beast is more specifically described in Revelation 14:11 as the mark of his name. So it is the mark of the name of the beast. The blasphemy of the beast reflects its character or name. And in chapter 13, verses 5 and 6, we see that this blasphemy issues forth from the beast's mouth, indicating to us a teaching or policy, a doctrine, if you will, which blasphemes. That is, brings into disrepute or maligns God's good name. Look at verse 17. And that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Look at Revelation 18 with me, if you will, please, in verse 12. Revelation 18 and verse 12. The merchandise of gold and silver and precious stones and of pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and all fine wood and all manner vessels of ivory and all manner vessels of most precious wood and of brass and iron and marble. And indeed, we know that this is more specifically reflective of the fact that they were making merchandise of individuals' souls or lives. They were buying and selling, and only the priests could practice. The mark identified the individual with one bearing the name of the beast, which was indicated by the number of his name. In verse 18 we read, here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. Here is wisdom. That is, wisdom lieth in the ability to identify the beast. And this takes us right back to what we discussed early on in our class on the first day. If we don't know who or what that beast system is, then how can we practice this wisdom that's spoken of here? Well, we have the ability to discern. I think we know the answer to that. The number of the beast, by counting the numbers of the letters, the number of a man, the power and authority of the papacy focused in a man, in the Pope, 666. And we've all seen that Latinos, the word Latinos, if we look at the individual value of the letters, the L is 30, A is 1, T is 300, E is 5, I is 10, N is 50, O is 70, and the S is 200, which if we add all those up, what does it give us? 666. And why 6? We know that 6 is indeed the number of man. Here we have three sixes. 3 denotes, in addition to other things, notes completion also. Here we have the complete manifestation of sin, both ecclesiastically and politically. The Latin kingdom in Latin also renders the same number, 666. So it's pretty clear who is identified in this context. I'm going to go back here for just a moment. Now I'd like to turn over to Revelation 17. And I apologize, we're moving through some of this rather quickly, but I wanted to be sure we got through the complete beast system today. Revelation 17. We don't have time to read through it first. But notice verses 1 and 2. And here in the scarlet-colored beast, we have judgment upon Babylon the Great. In verses 1 and 2, the angel pours out the seventh vial. And remember, that vial is poured out upon the air, showing that it will encompass all nations. The woman is described as a great harlot. And you'll remember, as we talked about Revelation 12, no longer was that individual the chaste virgin, but had become a woman with child. So we see the apostasy developing rapidly at that point in time. And now we have a further progression in that apostasy. We have a great whore, great harlot, in contrast to the ecclesia, that chaste virgin of 2 Corinthians 11. The ecclesia has been influenced by false teaching, spiritual fornication. And these are the very things that Brother Lou was talking about this morning. The ecclesia being influenced by this false teaching. And it doesn't matter who we are, how intelligent we are, we must constantly be aware of that potential and our own vulnerability. As this system was developing, it was becoming more appropriately described by a symbol of a great harlot. We are told that it encompassed many waters, and this refers to peoples over which the papal system had great influence. Look at verse 15 of this chapter. And he saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest where the whore sitteth are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. The same is said of Babylon in Jeremiah 51. And we know that, and if you'll turn there with me, Jeremiah 51, speaking of the destruction of natural Babylon, we have many parallels as we read through this chapter with chapters 17 and 18 of the Apocalypse. Jeremiah 51 and verse 13. O thou that dwellest upon many waters, abundant in treasures, thine end is come, and the measure of thy covetousness. Very much characteristic of the latter-day Babylon or Babylon the Great. The wine of her fornication relates to the false doctrines that deceive the nations and make them mad. Let's look at Revelation 18 and verse 23. 18 and verse 23. And the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee. And the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee. For thy merchants were the great men of the earth, and for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. And going back to Jeremiah 51, look at verse 7. Babylon hath been a golden cup in the Lord's hand, that made all the earth drunken. The nations have drunken of her wine, therefore the nations are mad. And therefore we see the symbol of Babylon used in relation to Babylon the Great. Once again, many, many parallels. This is certainly a real contrast to the gospel of the kingdom, as we read in Isaiah 55 in verse 1. Isaiah 55 in verse 1. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters, and he that hath no money. Come ye, buy and eat. Yea, come buy wine and milk without money and without place. This is the wine and milk, bringing wine and happiness. But when it's mixed with the wine of Babylon, it causes intoxication. We know that the kings of the earth have committed fornication, spiritual idolatry, spiritual adultery and infidelity with this beast system. The wilderness of the people in verse 3 is the area of their influence. And Job was conveyed to the wilderness of the people. John was conveyed to the wilderness of the people, and receives, of course, this message concerning the conditions that were extant within this wilderness. It is a description of spiritual darkness, a wilderness, if you will, existent at the time of the end, and into which the tribes of Israel will be regathered, preparatory to entering the land under Elijah. This woman associated with Rome as she rides upon the beast was previously introduced in Revelation 13:1. Rome, as she rides upon the beast, and we know that this very symbol is used in relation to the European Union as well. It is of a scarlet color, and we've discussed this already. It is the color of sin. And here, it is sin indeed, fully matured and manifested. The Spirit's evolution within this system. Let's go back to Revelation 17 and note verses 4 through 6. The purple is a symbol of royalty. She sits as a queen, we're told. In the reign of Leo the 12th in 1825, a medal was struck. The Roman state was represented by a woman holding a cross in her left hand, a cup in her right hand extended with the inscription Sedet Super Universum, or She Sits Upon the Universe. As a matter of fact, we have a Catholic church that's close to the attractions in Orlando, and it's known as Mary, Queen of the Universe. The adulterous woman is associated with the mystery of iniquity that the Apostle Paul warned would come, as we read in 2 Thessalonians 2. It mentions abominations here. And in the Greek, this word means idols in 2 Kings 23:13 and idolatry in Deuteronomy 18:9. They had corrupted what was originally truth, and the corruption was maximized, deluding them into the beliefs of a lie or system of falsehood. All the nations of Christendom is overspread by a covering. Notice Isaiah 25 with me. Isaiah 25, verses 6 through 8. And in this mountain shall the Lord of hosts make unto all people a feast of fat things, a feast of wines on the lees, of fat things full of marrow, of wines on the lees well refined. And he will destroy in this mountain the face of the covering cast over all people, and the veil that is spread over all nations. He will swallow up death in victory, and the Lord God will wipe away tears from all faces, and the rebuke of his people shall he take away from off all the earth, for the Lord hath spoken it. And brothers and sisters, we want to be participative in that event and enjoy the blessings that we have discussed here in the Apocalypse. The nations have been made drunk with strong delusion. The kingdom of men has certainly been diversified in its constitution since the time of Nimrod to the present. It is yet the same, as we read from Brother Thomas earlier this week. It is yet the same Nimrodian kingdom with Babylon and Assyria for its characteristics. The designation Mystery Babylon encompasses all other related systems which are not aligned with the truth, because she is styled the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. So it's all encompassing of those that are not aligned with the truth. She has become drunken with the blood of the saints as a result of the papal persecutions and the massacres of so-called heretics. The word admiration, as it appears here in verse 6, is better rendered with great wonder or astonishment. John was indeed astounded that a system claiming to be the bride of Christ could be so cruel to true believers. In verses 7 and 8 of this chapter 17 of Revelation, the beast of these verses are the same one that we considered in Revelation 13. However, it now has some additions. In John's day, it didn't exist as the ten horns or the powers. They had no kingdom. The territory upon which they now exist was the part of the western division of the Roman Empire. But upon it, distinct horn kingdoms did not exist. And in this respect, then, it is the beast that is not. The Roman Babylonian system has gone through many complexions through the years, but it has always existed in some form or not or another. And while John says the beast was and is not, he is also correct in stating yet is. In verses 9 through 11, we learn that the city of Rome is built upon seven hills. There have been seven forms of government, or seven kings, as verse 10 relates. Five of the seven kings, or forms of government, have fallen: the regal, the consular, the dictatorial, decemviral, and tribunitial. They had all passed. And the one that is during John's time, was the imperial, and one not yet come, but would continue for a short space, was the Gothic kingdom. The Gothic kingdom was replaced by a papal system ruled jointly from Rome and Vienna. And while new, it was in one sense the reestablishment of the imperial Rome under the name of the Holy Roman Empire, answering to the two-horned beast of Revelation 13 with its spiritual emperor in Rome and its secular emperor in Vienna. The wording "go into perdition" in verses 8 and 11 suggests that this will be the eighth or papal form of Roman government. And what does eight signify? Perfection, completion. See, so here again we see the completion or the fulfillment of this wicked system. And we see it here in its full manifestation. It will exist when the Lord returns to destroy it, when that image stands. In verses 12 through 14, these verses relate to a time when the ten horns, the European powers, will be allied with the Roman beast itself. And we see all that developing very rapidly today. And Lord willing, we're going to take some time tomorrow to look at how these nations are aligning themselves in preparation for Armageddon. Little do they know. At the time of the end, when the Lord destroys this system, the papal power will have influence over the European nations. We see that growing and developing, as we said today. Relative to the phrase, receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast, here's what Brother Roberts had to say concerning that. The ten-horned scarlet-colored beast of Revelation 17, which we are considering, while embracing the history of that time, represents more particularly the constitution of the Roman Empire at the crisis of its destruction. Consequently, the ten kings of verse 12 are the powers that will confederate with Rome in the hour of her retribution. The cause of the unity of mind with which they give their power and strength unto the beast for 1 hour is evidently the Lord's presence in the earth, though they know not he is the Lord, but imagine him to be, as we know, an antichrist. These, it is added, shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And the Lamb shall overcome them in this setting. The Lamb overcomes them, but not in a moment. To make war with the Lamb is not the work of a day. It implies all that is involved in preparation, organization, discussing plans of campaign, etc. It extends over a considerable period. 1 hour is not literal, of course. It must either be taken generally, this is your hour and the power of darkness, or it must be understood with precision as the fraction of a duplicated day of years. That is, a year of years. An hour of a day, year of years, would be the 12th part of 360 years, 30 years, if you will. In either case, the statement brings with it the idea of a prolonged struggle. Indeed, it will be extended to some degree. Verse 15 clarifies the interpretation of specific symbols. And frequently in the Apocalypse, we will have a verse that does just this. It will interpret various aspects of the symbols. We are shown that waters denote peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. The nations in the context of Revelation 17 are those ruled over by the Roman harlot. The conflict between the harlot and the horns of the beast, as recorded in verses 16 and 17, relates to the anti-papal policy of the European powers, particularly France, in the events of the French Revolution. So we have kind of a stepping back in time, and subsequently the campaigns of Napoleon. The Catholic Church lost nearly all her power, and it is described figuratively as desolate and naked. We're seeing the alliance between the powers of Europe and the Vatican develop quite rapidly today, and that power has been greatly restored and continues to grow. Verse 18 provides another of the Spirit's interpretations of the symbols of the Apocalypse. The woman described as the great city, specifically the city of Rome. The 17th chapter relates the activities of the papal system to the coming of Christ, and the following chapters describe her destruction by Christ and the saints. And we're about out of time here. I just want to wrap up with a couple of things to summarize. You'll remember we discussed these seven blessings very early on in our class. And indeed, it is our hope and desire that we will participate in these blessings. And I'd like to summarize what we have been saying relative to the Apocalypse with an excerpt from the pamphlet, The Dragon and the Lamb, because I think it well illustrates why we study the Apocalypse as well as its significance. The Apocalypse is indeed a message of love and instruction from the heavenly bridegroom to his ecclesial bride as he labors to perfect her for the glorious marriage of the Lamb. The bride has to make herself ready and keep herself unspotted from the world. With the help of Revelation, she is able to follow the events that herald her Lord's coming, and she is kept in a watchful and waiting attitude. With the help of the Apocalypse 2, she is shown the path of separation and purification. Men speak of the present world as a wonderful achievement by the work of great people. Brother Jimmy alluded to this in his class. A man of the world, seen as quite special. They look to the past as their glorious Christian heritage. But Jesus, in his last message, presents the world through the centuries as so many wild beasts, her churches as a harlot, her worship as spiritual fornication and sorcery, with theft and murder. These are strong words, but they are the words of God. This instruction leads the believer to a true assessment of the world and its churches, so that he is able to avoid the enticing golden cup and pleasant wine which the world offers in its philosophy and worship. And the saint walks steadfastly in the path of separation. Thanks.